Good evening and namaste. We welcome you all to the United Lodge of Theosophists. The topic for today's talk is the 8 verses of the mind training. Now, sometimes these 8 verses of the mind training are also referred to as the 7 verses of the mind training. In order to prepare our minds for today's talk, we will consider a short devotional reading from the Dhammapada. Impermanent are all conditioned beings. He who knows this ceases to be in the thrall of grief. This is the path of purity. Guarding speech, controlling the mind, not doing wrong with the body, a man keeps the 3 avenues to action clear and thus finds the path shown by the wise. Let's keep this devotional reading at the back of our mind while understanding the topic of today's talk. Now, a spiritual path is essential for human life since man is a spiritual being and not a social animal as science says. Although we see around ourselves there are a lot of advances in medicine, science, technology, and there's a lot of contribution by science to improve the quality of human life, overall if you see, they have not been able to free us from suffering and bring us sure and lasting peace and happiness. In fact, in many cases, if we see, science has brought about new problems for us that we did not face in the past, such as the environmental issues, nuclear threat, new diseases, genetic mutations, modifications. And to some extent, if you see, science is going towards the tangential direction of playing God. Now, this is just working on the external conditions and effects rather than addressing the internal cause and source of all conditions of life. Therefore, these external improvements are not sufficient to bring happiness, to bring peace, to reduce the suffering of humanity. For this internal transformation or internal thought process, right thinking, right living, right views of life is essential. And for this to happen, we need to actually understand the inner man. And we also need to follow a well-defined, well-tested, a well-tried approach, which we may call a way of living, or some may call it or label it as a spiritual path. But this way of living or this practice that provides a mechanism for an inner change, or if you may call it transformation, leaving behind all the incorrect ways of looking at life and creating a harmonious right approach and right way and right foundation of thought, speech and action, then we need to look to some source which is reliable and to some source which is tried and tested. And in this case, again, it doesn't mean that we blindly follow it. Even Lord Buddha has mentioned that we need to first understand, then evaluate, then apply, examine the results, and then decide whether it is appropriate for us or not. So we must then actually also see that there is a lot of things which are happening every moment in our mind, in our emotional level, and which is beyond the physical. So it is the thought process, the perceptions, the emotions, and all this together actually colors our perception of the world. You may be in a very different state one day, and the world may look to you very beautiful, very nice. But when you are in a different state the other day, it could be completely opposite. So in this case, the Buddha has mentioned that the world is led by mind and drawn along by the mind. All phenomena are controlled by one phenomena, the root. And from this perspective, we also have something known as the mind-only school, which states that the world and everything in it is actually a kind of a holographic illusion which is projected by the mind or the mind consciousness. Now, we should also understand that mind is not the brain. And between the physical brain and the mind, there is a connection. We may speculate and hypothetically state that this connection could be Fouad. However, the various perceptions, states of cognitions, emotions, and other mental factors are all connected and linked, and ultimately linked with the mind. And they are the various, in one way, the various vrittis or the fluctuations of our mind or different states of our mind in which our mind is going. Interestingly, in Sanskrit, the word for mind is chitta and can also be translated as heart. It refers to all our consciousness, sensory and mental, and the various mental states we experience. It's kind of an agglomeration of it. And by subduing the affected aspects of our mind, the vrittis of our mind, our experiences of the world in one way or the other get transformed, like we just discussed. But whereas if we seek to change only the external environment or the people in it, we continuously meet with frustration and disappointment because we cannot control the external environment. It is only by developing the great potential of our mind and our heart that we will be able to find a way out of the suffering and truly be able to benefit another. So if we have to bring a change in our life and a change in the life of others for betterment, it is only through the heart and mind. And heart is also mentioned in our ancient scriptures as a center of spiritual consciousness. Therefore, the obstacles which we aim to eliminate or the situations are not external, but actually are the afflictive mental states, our distorted attitudes, our disturbing and destructive emotions. And the tools which we use to construct them are also mental. That is compassion, wisdom, and other beneficial altruistic attitudes and emotions that we need to consciously cultivate. Also in this context, we need to keep in mind and realize that the faculty of imagination plays a very big part in the manifestation of our outer states. This idea of inner state being reflected in the outer state is also captured in a very profound concept in Buddhism, which is related to something known as the mandala principle. Wherein what it says is that the inner state or mandala is actually a projection of the outer, and the outer is a projection of the inner. So in fact, what's happening is that we are continuously projecting our inner state to the outer state, that is the outer state of our so-called world. And our so-called world is in a way a projection of our state of mind. So in this context, Lord Buddha taught from his own experience, and we are free to accept or reject, as we just discussed. Today's talk is in continuation to our previous talks, that is in the series. The first was Vajra Shedika Prajna Parimita Sutra. The second was Hridaya Sutra. And in this talk, we will continue on the same lines and further share few seed ideas and thoughts regarding these teachings. Also, we need to note that this is quite a detailed and a vast topic. We cannot do proper justice to this in such a short time. However, we will try to touch upon the core ideas. So as we know, mind is yet again one of our principles, one of our sevenfold principles or bodies. But we are not the mind. We are the observer, we are the witness. And that's the only reason we are able to observe the various states of our mind. As we have already seen in the previous talks, and we will just touch upon this, that there is this conditioned and impermanent nature of everything in this conditioned universe. And that everything is based on and dependent on many other things. So there is dependent origination. And so is this dependent origination happening in the case of our mind also. And with the states of our mind. Similarly, all our bodies, all our principles are made up of five components, which we discussed last time as the five skandhas. Just to refresh, form, rupa, feeling, vedana, impulses, samskara, conception, and you have consciousness. So, these, again, if we see, can further be broken down into number of different constituents and different elements which are known as dharmas. But let's not go into that. The point is that which needs to be noted is that everything in this universe is an aggregate based on and dependent on other aggregates. So there is dependent origination, and inherently there is nothing which exists independently or can exist independently except the one reality. That one reality being the substratum of all, and that one reality is that, the unspeakable, the unthinkable. It is the basis, the foundation of everything. That is the only reality. Hence, it is critical to keep at the back of our mind these teachings and realizations while living our day-to-day lives. This will eventually lead to equanimity of our mind, wherein we are undisturbed and do not associate ourselves with this body, with emotions, constructive or destructive, with circumstances of life, whatever they may be. This capacity to greet the life's situations, challenges, difficulties, with calm and joy is one of the key elements in training the mind. And on this we shall focus today. In order to consider the verses of mind training, we need to focus on the initial preconditions or preliminaries, as they are called, because in order to understand the verses of mind training, these initial thought process, it's a kind of a prep work for the mind, is required. And once that is achieved, then we'll be able to appreciate these eight verses. So the first one is that the whole of the so-called manifested universe and everything in it is temporary and illusive. Everything in the manifested universe is vibratory and is continuously changing. There is suffering, both happiness and sorrow is suffering, which is nothing but a vibratory change. So we need to look into the causes of this suffering and realize even this is temporary. Hence, cessation is possible. And then we need to walk on the path of cessation of suffering. And in fact, this is what the Four Noble Truths say. However, this suffering can be both physical and mental suffering. And primarily, if we see around ourselves, and even in our lives, we may observe that there is more prominent mental suffering in many cases than physical suffering. Because mind is the plane of real action. The mind or thought is the source of all physical actions. So this mental suffering also takes us to another important concept which we need to understand. And we have all experienced this. And while we go through this, we can relate it to our life. This other important concept is about the six realms of suffering. There are six realms of suffering, and often this is depicted by a Buddhist Thanga painting in which the god of death, which is Yama, is actually controlling these six realms. So we have the three lower realms and we have the three higher realms. The three lower realms are hell realm, hungry ghost realm, animal realm. The three higher realms are the human realm, jealous god realm, and god realm. Now, if we consider the three lower realms, the hell realm, what does it mean? Like I said, it is all these six realms are nothing but states of our mind. So hell realm, it is a feeling of suffering in the mind where we think everyone or everybody is against us. The life situations are against us and things are not working. It seems that it's a never-ending situation of life. Generally, it is made up of our own angry, envious, and hateful thoughts. Then the next lower realm is hungry ghost realm. Now, this is a situation wherein there is never anything enough. Nothing is enough. You have a feeling that you are never enough, or your efforts, your work, or your needs are never enough. You are frustrated and you are pulled by various desires which you cannot fulfill, but you keep yearning for them. Then the next lower realm is animal realm. This is a situation wherein you have a feeling as you are just trying to get by, and this is a state of like dullness, seeking comfort, ignorance. It's a very passive state. The higher realms, the first one is the human realm. In this, the mind works in the context of, if only I had. But this is the only realm where you are more perceptive. And in this realm, you have the opportunity to come out of these realms and to come out of this suffering. The next higher realm is jealous God realms. In this state, you know that the world thinks you are the best. But underneath, you are feeling that you are not. You are fueled by your lower mind, your ego, your aggressions, and you are always striving to achieve something. And the driving factor here is intense ambition. The next higher realm is God realm. And in this, you think that you just know how things are and you are always right. It is a kind of luxury of obliviousness. You are in a blissful, happy state. Everything is fine for you. The world is okay. Everything is good. And you are completely oblivious to the suffering of others, to the need of others, and to the suffering of mankind. So here we see that these are actually six states of our mind and the mental projections of these states. There could be more details to this, but this is just to give you an idea of how these realms are or how these states of mind are. Also, if we observe very carefully, we can see that there is the play of various gunas, which is further propelling these states of mind. And again, there is the karma element or the desire element, which is driving most of them. So what we see is that we have the lower mind, which is enmeshed with karma element. And the activity of this karma manasic mind is happening predominantly. We can say in the astral, lower astral regions. And as we all know, that our thoughts are connected with elementals, and then again they are connected with the skandhaic tendencies, which are thriving on this thought energy. So unconsciously, while we are in a particular state of mind, or so-called realm, we are actually increasing the skandhaic tendencies in that direction. And it's like a rabbit hole. We get stuck in those states of mind. Unless we consciously provide a counter current to it. So now you can see how all these are connected. And the more skandhaic tendencies are generated in a particular direction, the more you will get pulled and sucked into it, unless a conscious effort is made to come out of it. And as discussed, also let's not forget that everything in this conditioned universe or world is vibratory. So are our thoughts. So is the effect of what is happening based on our continuous thoughts. We are actually changing our vibratory field. And again, we are continuously oscillating between these vibratory experiences and getting stuck in them. The other preliminary concept is, as mentioned in Dhammapada, which states that we need to be mindful regarding the bodily speech and mind irritation. So In this case, if we see the root cause of such mental afflictions is the notion of I, the notion of me, I, and the karmic actions and projections which arise from the false basis or notions of self and I. So on the basis of I, my, and mine, we create a whole network of actions and reactions. And hence we need to understand the real nature of things. As already discussed before, we need to apply the understanding of shunyata or emptiness and dependent origination. Now, this needs to be applied not only to everything in the world out there, but also to our various bodies, our principles, and try to understand the real nature of who we are. That is, in reality, we are untouched. We are beyond any of these sensations or emotions or situations. So in this manner, we need to try to understand the nature of reality using investigation and reasoning. And this is a continuous process. And by understanding from this perspective, as stated just now, there are three main other elements which we need to practice. The first one is universal compassion. Second is bodhicitta. Third is emptiness. Now, emptiness we have discussed several times in previous discussions and this, so we'll not touch much upon that. Universal compassion, and regarding generating universal compassion, we need to follow a very well-defined, tried and tested cause and effect mechanism. And that is sevenfold. The very first aspect of that is generation of the right motive. In our case, the right motive being benefit of all humanity. The second is negate the self, the personality. Do not associate yourself with this body. Try to realize the real you. And then try to contemplate on the reality of all beings. The reality of all beings is the reality of you. Meditate on birth, death, and sickness. Contemplate on the impermanence of this physical life. The fourth point is contemplating on suffering of the samsara and of the six realms or states of mind as we discussed. Fifth aspect to this is avert from all non-virtuous activities. That is taking another's life, stealing, sexual misconduct, use of harsh words, idle gossip, covetous mind. So these are all non-virtuous activities. Sixth is all distorted views must be eliminated based on the teachings. And avoid engaging in deceitful activities. The final point, seventh point, is cultivating loving kindness for all by keeping in mind the true nature of each one of us and the true nature of things. So this is the sevenfold practical mechanism which is based on the law of cause and effect to generate universal compassion. Then the third main point comes, which is bodhicitta. Now, what exactly is bodhicitta? Bodhicitta is the aspiration to attain full awakening or realization for the benefit of mankind and all sentient beings. Hence, in order to generate this in us as a practical way, we need to have deep contemplation on the defects of samsara. And the situations which give rise to aspirations for liberation, the aspiration of self-compassion, needs to be generated. So there is this aspiration of self-compassion, which is wanting ourselves to be free from suffering, so that we are able to help all sentient beings to be free from suffering. And this forms a kind of a chain and forms the basis of bodhicitta. And in this way, we develop unbiased love and compassion for all beings. The whole world and all sentient beings are looked from the perspective of a big one family. Similarly, like we discussed the sevenfold aspect of generating universal compassion in a practical way, there is a sevenfold cause and effect mechanism to generate bodhicitta, which is as follows. First one, recognizing that all sentient beings have been our parents in previous lives, which is quite logical possibility. If you see, even if you see you have had 100 past lives and the permutation and combinations of these, you could have had so many parents in your past 100 lives. Contemplating on the kindness when they were our parents or relatives, wishing to repay their kindness. These three as a cause bring forth the next as an effect in this chain, which is, the fourth one is deep affection and heartwarming love for all beings. This again leads to the fifth, compassion. Now this compassion is a sense of unbiased love and concern for all. Hence it is a feeling of metta, as it is said, or karuna, which is generated in us. This again leads to a further effect in the chain, which is the great resolve. That is, assuming the responsibility to work for the sentient beings. And that's where the famous well-known Kuan Yin pledge comes into play, which we all are aware of. And this cause or this pledge leads to the final seventh effect, which is bodhicitta. And when true bodhicitta in such a way, in a practical sense, is generated in us, which is, if it is truly generated in us, then we actually kill our personality. We no longer associate ourselves with I and my body. We realize that either we all come out, we all as one family of humanity come out of suffering, or none can come out of it. And from then onwards, our thoughts, deeds, and actions are only for the benefit of all. So at this stage, we have lost all our self-interest, self-confidence, self-centeredness, self-attachment, attitude, self-grasping. Anything to do with personality is actually destroyed. With the powerful force of knowledge and realization and practical application. Further, in this line of thought, one has to develop the 10 paramitas, which we all know about, but to illustrate, they are generosity, ethical conduct, fortitude, joyous effort, meditative stability, wisdom, unshakable resolve and determination, discrimination, truthfulness, and equanimity. And then one has to, this as a final step in generation of bodhicitta completely, one has to completely offer oneself to the higher self, which is complete surrender of the self to the self, complete self-reliance, accepting whatever is karmically due, because only then it will develop complete self-reliance and there will be generated inner strength. And that's when true compassion and true bodhicitta will be generated in oneself. So these are the initial preconditions and points which one has to understand to prepare our minds for the actual 8 verses, which is the main context of today's talk. So now we will go to the 8 verses. And these 8 verses we have shared in a handout. The first one is, with the thought of attaining awakening for the welfare of all beings who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I will constantly practice holding them dear. What does this mean? Now imagine looking at beings around you. Your friends, enemies, strangers, humans, animals, the sick, the healthy, the young, the old, and seeing them all as equal, precious beings, irrespective of whatever their outer attributes are, we will realize that it is not easy to cultivate such an attitude instantaneously. So such an attitude takes time to cultivate, but it is both realistic and beneficial because other beings are a major source of our existence, of our happiness, of our prosperity, mental and physical. And all the experiences that we value and seek depend upon the connectedness, cooperation, and interaction with other people or other beings, even nature, whether it's whichever kingdom of nature. So we depend on their efforts at all levels. For example, they grow the food for us, the clothes we wear, the construction of buildings, the roads, the trash which they remove. The feeling of comfort and security which we have is also because of them. Somebody is taking care of our national security. Somebody is taking care of our personal security and so on and so forth. Our feeling of, our learnings and knowledge also come from them. The talents which we develop is provided by somebody who teaches us from schooling to college and day-to-day in life. And even our progress on the path is again developed and connected. So our internal well-being depends on others as well and vice versa. As we train our minds to see others in a more positive way, feelings of closeness and caring arise in us. On the other hand, if we dwell on others' faults and despise them, then we become unhappy. A sense of goodwill towards others gave us inner strength in our daily lives and even helps us in facing the situations of life. When we, for example, experience pain, we often become weak-minded. We have a feeling of anger in us, or we are overwhelmed because we lack control of the situation, which we think we did not choose. However, while we may feel some discomfort when empathizing with or feeling compassion for another's pain, it is accompanied by a certain inner stability and confidence, because we have accepted that pain voluntarily. Then we further see that a self preoccupation in our life basically brings misery. Viewing everything whether large or inconsequential in terms of ourselves. So this self-centered thought clouds our judgment and makes us do wrong actions. So in short, we need to realize the connectedness with all. We need to realize that this life is like a school of life, wherein everybody is a teacher for everybody, and everybody is contributing in one way or the other to everybody's well-being and progress on this path. The second verse is as follows. Whenever I am with others, I will practice seeing myself as the lowest of all. And from the very depth of my heart, I will respectfully hold others as supreme. So building on the first verse, to see others as precious, the second verse points out that our arrogance is an obstacle to doing things. Love and compassion are based on seeing others as worthwhile and respecting them. And these virtues are unbiased and go beyond the ordinary attitudes of cherishing those who help us and feeling pity for those who are less fortunate. And the remedy for arrogance is when we practice seeing ourselves as the lowest of all. That's the remedy. But this must be understood in a proper context. It does not mean like we are denigrating ourselves or succumbing to low self-esteem or thinking that we are worthless. It is seeing ourselves lower in relative terms. So basically, this verse encourages us to cherish others and appreciate others with their good qualities and regard others as even better to you in various ways. So when practically speaking, greed, hatred, arrogance overwhelms us, we usually act without restraint, often in ways that we later regret. However, cultivating the thought that others are valuable and that we are just one among the other enables us to actually stop this behavior. The third verse is, in all actions, I will examine my mind, and the moment an affliction arises, endangering myself and others, I will firmly confront and avert it. So these mental afflictions or destructive emotions are actually the root cause of our disturbed state of our mind, which destroys our peace and destroys our happiness. And our task is to defeat this inner enemy, so-called. So confronting and averting afflictions does not mean suppressing them or pretending that they do not exist, which can actually cause a psychological unhealthy state. It's rather the other way, wherein we notice the affliction and we observe it. We do not react to it, these destructive thoughts and afflictions. We apply an antidote to that, which is like you are extinguishing the fire with water, if you may. So the moment you see a destructive emotion, you observe, do not react, and you apply equal and opposite antidote. So for cultivating an introspective awareness, which identifies the afflictions the moment they arise in a mindful way, we need to practice this day in and day out. But if we do not practice and if we do not apply this, then we risk giving afflictions a free rein to our mind, and it can cause havoc in our lives. And as we discussed before, the skandhaic tendencies will keep on increasing, their strength will keep on increasing. So it is always wise to apply immediate antidotes. So for example, to counter anger, we may contemplate on love and compassion. To oppose strong attachment, we reflect on the disgusting aspects or temporary aspects of things or undesirable aspects. To dissolve arrogance, we reflect on our shortcomings and all that we don't know or understand, to increase our own humility, and so on and so forth. The fourth point is, whenever I meet a person of bad nature who is overwhelmed by negative energy and intense suffering, I will hold such a rare one dear, as if I had found a precious treasure. So in life, we may face difficult people, and difficult people may challenge our ability to maintain compassion, equanimity, and peace of mind. When we encounter such people, the temptation is to react with impulse, to react with strong anger or even violence. Some people may simply appear to us hateful, offensive, or disagreeable. But we need to be especially mindful in their presence to counter the affliction that arises in our mind. Not only we should observe this, but we should counter and we should work then and there. It may be easier said than done, but that is what is required. Because those feelings or those mental disturbances which may arise in us may not be only from this particular lifetime. They could be of previous lifetimes, which unconsciously are generated in us when we get in those situations and with those people. Likewise, we need to be very mindful of these opportunities, because whenever such people we are encountering, it's karmic, and at the same time, it's a very appropriate opportunity for us to apply all these teachings. Otherwise, how will we learn and how will we get this opportunity? Fifth point is, when others out of jealousy mistreat me with abuse, slander, and so on, I will practice accepting defeat and offering the victory to them. So, practically speaking, from a conventional legal point of view, if we are wrongfully accused, we feel justified in reacting with righteous indignation and we feel that we are right, but it also propels the original karmic disharmony which has actually led to this situation. Now, accepting defeat does not mean that we make ourselves weak or we accept the responsibility of the wrongdoing of others. Here, offering victory to others means that we don't have to have the last word in the discussion or argument or continuously correct the other person. We can become more open, more open-hearted, more tolerant, more calm, and share our thoughts. But getting into a fight or a disturbed state of mind will not work. And that's what is meant as offering the victory to others. And this is not to suggest that we should simply yield to whatever harm or injustice is being inflicted to us. In fact, according to the teachings, it's mentioned that we should respond to injustice with a strong countermeasure, especially if there is a danger or harm to us and others. But we need to be sensitive to the situation. We need to be mindful that the other person is behaving in such and such way because of their ignorance or because of they being stuck in one of these six states of mind, or there could be other personal battles which they are fighting. Sixth one is, when someone I have benefited and in whom I have placed great trust hurts me very badly, I will see that the person as my supreme teacher. So generally, when we help somebody, we expect, or this is a human nature, that at least a thank you is returned, if not some other favor. But that's a human nature, how it works. But then we also need to realize that in this case, it goes back to the previous teaching, that if we are truly helping somebody, it is not for the return benefit which we are looking for. It goes back to introspecting our particular motive behind it. It also goes back to the teaching that, do we really realize the true nature of ourselves and others? If we do that, we will realize that it is completely trivial. So in short, we basically extend our compassion and forgiveness to others who behave in such a way, and extend our gratitude to those who betray our trust for the opportunity they give us to practice fortitude and forgiveness. And then and there, we are harmonizing the disturbed karmic situation which may be generated in this lifetime, or which may be a cause of disharmony from a previous lifetime. The seventh verse is as follows: I will offer directly and indirectly every benefit and happiness to all beings, my mothers. I will practice in secret, taking upon myself all their harmful actions and suffering. So this particular verse actually describes the taking and giving meditation, which is also known as Tonglen, wherein at the level of thought, we cultivate compassion so strong that we imagine taking upon ourselves the suffering of others, as well as the afflictions and destructive karma that caused it. And upon taking these, we think that they destroy our ignorance and our self-centeredness. Also, while doing so, mentally, we are able to more understand others' situation. And then, with a loving heart, we imagine transforming our body, possessions, and everything in providing it to others. So this is a mental thought process, and this meditation is generally practiced in conjunction with our breathing, wherein we are inhaling the suffering of others with compassion, and we are exhaling love and compassion to others. So while doing this, we are actually purifying our own sheaths of the soul. We are purifying our mind. We are destroying our hamkara in us. We are also destroying the lower propensities in us. But this is not done in open. This practice is done in our own private state of mind, wherein it is for us not to show to people that we are doing. It is to work on ourselves and to understand, realize the suffering of others. Then we have the eighth one, which is without these practices being defiled by stains of the eight worldly concerns, by perceiving all phenomena as illusory. So this is again related to the eight worldly concerns, which are delight at receiving money and possessions and dejection at not receiving or losing them. Delight with receiving praise and approval and dejection when receiving criticism or disapproval. Delight with fame and a good reputation and dejection when infamous or notorious. Delight with pleasurable sight, sound, smell, taste, tangible objects, and dejection with those that cause unpleasant feelings. So these are the eight worldly concerns which consist of these four pairs. And these eight worldly concerns actually create a disturbed state of our mind. They pollute our virtuous activities. For example, when we have a meeting, let's say, and when when a person is chairing a meeting, and if in the back of our mind there is this thought during or end of the meeting that, did I give a good talk? Will people praise or criticize me? Then in this case, my mind is polluted with one of these eight worldly concerns. So what's the antidote? If we perceive all phenomena, all nature, conditioned, manifested universe as illusory, in one way we are able to prevent the impact of these eight worldly concerns from contaminating our mind and changing the state of our mind. And hence we need to apply this continuously and very cautiously and consciously. And another aspect or another antidote to this is to understand that everything is inherently existing as a dependent arising in a dependent origination, which we already discussed. So friends, these are the practical ways of application of these teachings in our real life, and these eight verses help us in our day-to-day life to have the right thoughts, right state of our mind, because it's very important, as we discussed in the initial talk, that our inner state or inner mandala, if you may call it, projects our outer state and our outer mandala. And if all of us become generators of good vibrations, generators of compassion, metta, karuna, love, at least if we try, then all our inner mandalas will be projected out, and the whole humanity cumulatively, collectively will become a better place. And that's what we need to do. We need to apply, try, practice as much as possible in our lives in different situations. It will be difficult. It is difficult, but one has to start whenever possible. So thank you very much.